We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Good morning, folks. It is No Filter Friday today. We hope you had a great Thursday evening. We've got a wonderful lineup for you. We've got three half-hour segments that will go to the talk lines. We'd love to hear from you. There's been so much going on, so much controversy, so much about so many different issues locally, on the state level, on the national level. Things that are kind of, a lot of folks criticize me for using this word, mystifying. Can't put my finger on it. Don't quite understand what it is that we're trying to accomplish in some areas, but we'd love to hear from you. At 10:30 this morning, we're going to visit with Coach Lee Westlake, Director of Coaching, New Orleans Spartans Football Club. He's a specialist in sports and science college. On July 15th, the coach guided the Spartans, a tiny little academy soccer club. They won a national championship in Tampa. Got to be absolutely incredible. We'll hear about that story, the difficulties, the challenges. We should be very proud of them. They're from right here in our beautiful city, the place that we call home. At 11 o'clock, we'll visit with Lacey Osborne for our St. Tammany Economic Show segment. She is the CEO and president of the St. Tammany Chamber of Commerce. We'll talk about population growth on the North Shore and issues as a result thereof. And we'll start out the 12 o'clock hour with Ira Melman. A recent report, you've heard me talk about remittances before. A remittance is sending money back to an immigrant's home origin country. What are the missed opportunities for the U.S. economy when this occurs, and how important is that? You'll want to hear this report. It's got some staggering numbers. So give us a call at 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. 504-260-1870. Also, you can check me out at Newell WWL at on X and Facebook, the Newell Norman Show. We post a lot of stuff there as well. I don't know about you, but this controversy about a late-night talk show host becoming a political issue, and for those on the left, a rally cry for I'm not exactly what it is that they're so concerned about, and why they believe that the elimination of this show is an attack on our democracy, attack on this, attack on that. These are private companies. They make decisions like this every day. There's been other talk show hosts, major talk show hosts that have been canceled over the years. Pick a medium, and any medium, you're going to find a whole list of talk show hosts that have been canceled for a whole host of reasons, right? Whether or not their topics are in line with their audience or not, whether or not they're looking to bring younger talent in or not, whether or not they're able to make money with that segment of the show, with advertisers or not. Are advertisers comfortable with those individuals for a whole host of reasons? Yes. Do they bring biases? Yes. Do they bring all kinds of challenges to the market? Absolutely. You never know, right? Then you have the ratings. Being number one in the ratings doesn't really equate necessarily to making money. Management of expenses and things of that nature relative to ratings and how those ratings transfer into advertising dollars are all very complex algorithms that exist out there in making a decision one way or another as to whether or not there is a future viability of a particular show segment or otherwise. This is tough times for all of these groups because of the unbundling of the media and so many different options now to receive news, to receive comedy, to receive entertainment. It's crazy. The competition is greater than it has ever been. You add to that the disruption of everybody's life of the pandemic coming in. We all kind of consume things one way. Coming out of the pandemic, it changed incredibly. And it changed at a pace that a lot of companies have had a very difficult time staying current with. So how we get to this point where we're going to make this about politics and we're going to make this about a bribe, or we're going to make this about Donald Trump or others criticizing and challenging folks and doubling down on them one way or another, is kind of interesting to me. I like to go to the data first. The math has no emotion. It is what it is, and it's not going to change. And the reality is, it's hard to argue when you lose a listening audience from 3.1 million to 1.9 million. It's a big number. And in the coveted core group, not doing well at all in the 18 to 49 segment. Around 200,000 viewers. The advertisers look at this big time. Advertising spend there, I think, dropped by about 40 or 45%. Well, now, we can try to overlook all of that and blame, you know, the Trump administration or whatever, because I don't know how this individual was carrying the mantle for the left. They have a deep bench, right? I mean, can anyone argue that? I mean, let's go to any of the other channels and let's find out whether or not there's a conservative in mainstream TV, not cable, but on mainstream TV. Let's find a conservative that's in that same time slot out there that people would be concerned about, that maybe the saturation of our messaging is going to be affected or to a significant way because we're losing one of the guys. Well, no, the other two, the bench is strong, right? But they're suffering from the same challenges. The math ain't working. And people are looking to alternatives. Why do you think these stations have developed digital sides? Why do you think these stations now have subscription programming that's out there? Why do you think they have all of these other things that they're offering? Because the nature of which the different age groups and demographics consume what they consume has changed totally differently. It's a challenge for everyone that's in this industry. Yes, we can get into the conspiracy theories and think that this is something other than what it is. Now, it's hard to feel sorry for a guy that made $20 million a year, right? He's not like us. And I've never known somebody to get fired a year from now. And if the reality is what everybody says it is, that it's all about Trump, and it's all about this settlement, and it's all about Trump doubling down, I like to try to put myself in Paramount's position, what would be the best course of action? Not to let him hang around for a year. Trump's only in office for four. Trump can do the math. That means two of the 4 years, Stephen Colbert would be on his ass. He's the deal maker. You think that would be the deal that he would make? I don't think so. It doesn't make any sense. It would be pay the man, get him the hell out of here. And in true form, what Colbert has decided to do is to continue to beat up on the paymaster, the people that pay him. Now, I know there are a lot of business owners that live to listen to this show. Think about it for a moment. How long would you keep the employee around that is constantly and consistently publicly? It's one thing within the confines of the organization to make the observations about the company, but publicly trashing the people that pay for you, the people that provide the assets and resources for you to be able to do what you do. Oh, and by the way, make that paltry $20 million a year. How long would you keep that person around? You need not answer. You know what the answer is. Not long at all. It wouldn't take very long at all. The person's gone. He's not working or she's not working in the best interest of the entity. You heard me say this a million times. The entity's interest always outweighs the individual, except if it's Stephen Colbert. Because Stephen Colbert went publicly and said he doesn't know if he could ever trust CBS ever again. Really? That was before he got fired, when he was just complaining about the compromise to the lawsuit that was filed against CBS. Now, you think that he would be more sophisticated than that to know that there are a number of reasons that you settle lawsuits, right? It's not necessarily that you were culpable and what you did was wrong, or you believe you were culpable and what you did was wrong. It could be monetary, was going to cost too much to defend, right? The reputation of the entity, how much would that be impaired? Blue sky value. List goes on and on and on and on. You know, investors, this, that, advertisers, what's their reaction going to be? You know, 50-something percent of the country ended up, right at 50% of the country ended up voting for Donald Trump. Would that not be a legitimate concern? If you're in this business, you're only going after 50 and just poo-poo on the other 50? Is that a wise business strategy? I would suspect not. But it's amazing how all these alleged sophisticated individuals in business and in the industry completely bypass all of the obvious financial considerations of a settlement of a lawsuit or otherwise, in moving a chapter behind you in order to move forward. Now, do I believe that their thinking was influenced by the potential merger that they had out there? Obviously. That whole thing is about a value-added proposition. Why would you want to impair it in any way, shape, or form? It would not make any sense from a business perspective. The industry's challenging enough. Why would I want to heap more challenges on myself in an attempt to succeed? Think about mainstream and the retooling and the re-engineering that's been going on a number of stations here lately, because they have been struggling for several years now, coming out of the pandemic. They have been struggling big time. They have renegotiated the contracts of almost every major talent on television. There are those that say they were really overpaid. They got caught up in this movement in television, a lot of it driven by political ideology, quite frankly. They were chasing small segments of the demographic, thinking that they were hitting home runs. And meanwhile, a lot of these hosts were making more money than they've ever made in the history of television. And if anyone for a moment thinks that that line just goes up on that graph every year after year after year, and there are not peaks and valleys as it relates to compensation in any industry code, you're sadly mistaken. It doesn't work that way. But this could only be about Trump. It's the only logical reason that a shill for the Democratic Party would be let go. It couldn't be that people really weren't getting that warm and fuzzy from the messaging. Not at all. The loss of advertising dollars, the loss of viewer is the what. That's the outcome. So when it became time to focus on the why, it wasn't about anybody there. It wasn't about the $100 million a year they were spending in staff and resources to put that show on. Couldn't have been. Couldn't have been. It couldn't have been anything to do with the fact that they lost audience. No, it had to be about a Republican. It had to be about conservatives. And more importantly, it had to be about Donald Trump. The real issue here, there was an interesting opinion piece in the Washington Post. Megan McArdle wrote it, and she's right. The thing to be concerned about is the financial dynamics of late night TV, especially my age group that grew up watching late night TV and continued to watch late night TV. Not to the extent that I used to, not nearly as often as I used to, but I still do somewhat. I do miss the old days of Johnny Carson, quite frankly, where it really, and you've had a number of people say this, it really wasn't about him. It was really about the guest, who were representative of all walks of life, of all political ideologies. Everybody was fair game. It didn't seem like you were watching the activist hour. And it's not only on the left. There's a lot of this on the right as well. And ultimately, it will catch up to all of them. To every single last one of them. Because people want to be entertained. Folks don't tune in for certain reasons. If you have a comedian, as the show host, what do they want to hear? They want to hear about funny stuff. But they don't want it to be one way all the time. And the why is reflected in the data. The data is the why. That's the most objective measure that there is. Are there some coincidences that may have been a consideration? Who knows? And does it really matter? Because the data says that the show was on a slide. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with
us. We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Welcome back, folks. I always love these types of stories when the underdog, wins it all. And I know a lot about soccer clubs. Both of my children played in soccer clubs, been there. In intense competition for a number of years, and it's always really exciting to celebrate the win of a team that comes together. And joining us is Coach Lee Westlake, director of coaching the New Orleans Spartans Football Club. Coach, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheriff Newell. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Coach, if you would, let's start out. Tell us about the Spartans, who they are, why they are, and how they went about this journey.
Okay, so we're an idea that came about around 2011. A bunch of parents, probably three or four parents, decided that they had some special talent as children, and they wanted to provide something that maybe wasn't available in Louisiana. Something affordable, something that's not out of reach for people in Louisiana. Fast forward a few years to 2014, 2015, I was approached as a player here in New Orleans to come in and take the title of director of coaching of a soccer club that has amazing visions. And I was grateful as a player. It's kind of a dream job for me. So I stepped into a director of coaching role, and for the next 11 years, we managed to build the club from kind of three teams all the way up to 11 teams at one point. It became rather big, a lot to manage. So we downsized the following year to six teams. It's been an incredible journey. The successes these boys have had. You know, we have 100 kids in our club, and we faced clubs of 1,000 plus, hundreds of kids in their club, and had some tremendous success over the years. To this point where we're at national champions.
So obviously these travel clubs, they travel all around. You're playing, as you point out, clubs that have a lot more kids and a lot more sponsors. I remember my children playing clubs that were sponsored by Nike. I remember the first time we walked out on the field and we looked at our uniforms and we looked at theirs. And we felt like the Bad News Bears. I'm sure y'all had that same experience.
Yeah, we still do, honestly. I mean, it's incredible what these families and what these kids have achieved. I couldn't agree more. We are that, and we still are that. When you talk about uniforms, let's talk about resources. We just don't have fields. I mean, you're talking about clubs that have 5, 6, 7 fields, up to 10 fields in their organizations. You know, we have the support of City Park, which have been fantastic for us, but we still only have one field, and we have six teams to make it happen.
Yeah, and access to a field with our type of weather, too, is critical because you cancel almost as many practices as you have, probably. So it's just, you know.
Agreed.
It is quite the challenge. So tell us about the season leading up to going to Tampa to play in this tournament.
Yeah, the boys were led by Coach Josie Portillo, one of my technical director here at the club, for all of their league games, full of highs and lows. It was one of those seasons where you're walking away from the field, losing by a goal, and kind of feeling a little bit hard done by. With that said, the boys managed to qualify for President's Cup here in Louisiana after not such a great regular season. So going into that kind of state playoffs, if you like, a lot of pressure on the boys to perform. They performed very, very well. They were able to come out of state unbeaten, and managed to make their way to regionals. Regionals for us, we've been there a few times, but I'm sure you're aware, Sheriff, it's not an easy level. It's quite a high level of football at the regional level.
It is.
You're starting to bring Texas into the equation, you know, North and South Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida. They're super powerhouses. So we went into regionals and said, you know what, if we can make the Final Four, this will be incredible for us as an organization. So to go through regionals, first few games, we get there, we get a win, we get another win, and we're thinking, hold on a minute, this isn't normal, this is not something we're used to. And then we head to the final, and unfortunately we fell short in the final of regionals. It was really hard on the boys because we'd already crushed that first goal of making the Final Four, and to make that final was absolutely incredible for us and for Louisiana, I have to be honest. We lose that final 3-2, so we were a little hard on ourselves, and as we were about to pack up our staffs and leave the area, we get approached by our state, and they say, hey guys, you've managed to punch a ticket to nationals, you've got a wild card. And obviously the kids are ecstatic, and now our eyes are lit up, they've wiped the tears away, and we've got an exciting trip to nationals. Now nationals is a whole different juggernaut of itself. We go into nationals again, that set some goals, that set some targets, so we set the target of Final Four, a massive target. And a massive undertaking for these boys. that I may say have been with us in this club for 8 years plus, the majority of these players. So they're a real homegrown talent here at the New Orleans Spartans. We had internationals, again, some great teams. Six of the eight teams, actually, that went in there were Division One teams that had also dropped down like us. So we had some real good competition out there. And like I said, everything was on our side. And long story short, we were able to go out there and put a real performance together and overcome some massive adversity. We actually had to play the team we lost to in the first game of the national tournament in the semi-final. We managed to beat those guys 1-0. So we overcome that first loss of nationals to face that team in semi-finals, which again was massive for these boys. Heading into the final of the national championship, we now have to face the team out of Florida that we lost to in the regional final. So nerves, a lot on the line. But I knew my boys. I believed in the boys. Coach Josh and I believed in the boys, and we knew we had the mental toughness and the tenacity to overcome that loss and lift that trophy and bring it back to the boot in Louisiana. And that's exactly what the boys did. They dug the heels in, and they got stuck in for a full 80 minutes of football in 90-degree heat. So very similar to here in Louisiana, out there in Florida, yeah. And took that team to overtime. And managed to score two goals in overtime to win the game 4-2. Just an incredible, incredible achievement.
The team, a lot of different kids from a lot of different walks of life, right? From what I'm able to read, a very diverse team. Tell us about that and tell us how important that was to the psyche, the makeup of the team, the emotion of the team and otherwise.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Lots of diversity within the team, and it was the perfect mix. You know, when we put teams together as coaches, we try to have that right mix of that mental toughness as well as some good quality technical players. So having those kids from different backgrounds really was like a great puzzle that we put together. Which made all the difference. Like you said, we had kids coming from different walks of life, different social backgrounds that bring very different things to the game of soccer. And without that makeup, I don't think we'd have had the success we've had. I mean, we have players that are coming from private schools. We also have kids that are in public schools that I don't have the finances to get themselves to and from practice, let alone to and from a national championship or regional tournament. So that gives you an idea of the spectrum of players that we have.
And as a coach, that makes it the task all the more difficult, right? I mean, there's a beautiful upside to that, but there's also challenges to that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely. I mean, the financial things are really, you know, a big kicker for us. We've got players that, you know, one in four players in my club is on financial aid. And managing that as a director of coaching isn't easy because, you know, you're looking at expectations of everybody. The beautiful thing about our small club and our culture and what we've built here is it's a very accepting club. And our parents and players and the staff, the back staff, the board that I have are willing to do whatever it takes to make sure everybody's on the same level, which is just commendable.
You know what I love about the growth of soccer in this country? Coach, where are you from?
I'm born and raised in London, England.
Yeah. So the culture of this game is entirely different from where you come from to here, right? Is that a fair characterization?
Absolutely.
I'm always amazed by the kids because there's so much pressure to do the sport, you know, of the way that y'all look at football as opposed to the way that we look at soccer. And mm-hmm. And in many respects, it's not a sacrifice, really, if you know what I mean, to make a decision in England to go play soccer. In the United States, in many respects, it still is. Not as bad as it once was, you know, with peer pressure, because it's become a much more accepting sport, and it's a growing sport, thankfully, because I actually love the sport, and I love watching it. But it makes it a little tougher here.
Yeah, it definitely does. When I talk to friends back at home in England and they're asking me what I'm doing, when am I coming back, when am I going to come back, and to coach the real game. It's an interesting quote to hear something like that, because I really feel the game, like you said, is growing here. Louisiana, I'd say, is getting there slowly but surely, and I think having these national titles here in Louisiana is really going to shine a light on the players that we have here. And again, to get to your point, that sacrifice should be lower. It shouldn't be such a sacrifice for families financially and the burden of having, you know, multiple kids in the family. The travel for soccer nowadays, there's a lot of expectation with it. So I guess my point is, having this national title is now going to take, you know, make some of that worth it. Parents are going to say, you know what, this is a great sport. Louisiana's really doing something with soccer that starts to push our kids into that. And as you said, it's a growing sport. So those national titles are going to do nothing but great things for our parents and players here in Louisiana.
I'm sure there's a lot of curiosity out there. I've been curious about it. Are there recognizable differences between the way you're playing soccer in the UK and the way we play soccer here in the US?
Again, I think that's you could take each club by club and each coach by coach and team by team. I think, you know, the vision and philosophy that we have here and the methodologies that we use here at our club are very similar to what you could expect a club to have anywhere in Europe. Now you're talking about the influence of European players and European coaches and European finances coming into the US game. So you're starting to see the culture and the style of play change. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, because I got to imagine that there's a desire in Europe to grow the sport even bigger than what it is there now. It's hard to imagine that it can get bigger, but I guess it can, right?
In some capacity, I imagine it can, but in Europe, we very much live for the sport. We very much live for the sport. So it's the first sport on the weekends. Who's my team playing or who am I playing? And in America, hopefully, and in Louisiana, that's going to be the case in the coming years, especially with a World Cup right down the corner.
Coach Lee Westlake, congratulations to you and your members of the New Orleans Spartans Football Club. We are very proud of that accomplishment. And if you pass that on to the players, we'd certainly appreciate it. And we'd like to have you back on whenever you want to talk about soccer again.
Sure.
Or football. Excuse me.
you can refer to stuff, but all good. Thanks again, Sheriff, for having us. Thank you for taking the time. It means a lot to us. And let's make soccer big in Louisiana, huh?
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Coach Lee Westlake, Director of Coaching New Orleans Spartans Football Club. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
On the text line, it says the next program on WWL is going to tell you the truth. The truth, according to that program, is that the late show being canceled is the result of Paramount smooching Donald Trump's derriere. I think that's, interesting, right? So I would pose this question to you, because I had this conversation with one of my friends who's a left leaner, and I said, what do you think would have happened? And a lot of reporters, you know, so this is not an original idea, but a lot of reporters are starting to ask these questions. What do you think would have happened if Stephen Colbert was the highest producing show in the history of late night television? No one had his audience. No one had the gross revenue that was being generated by that show. Do you believe for a single moment that he gets canceled? Ponder that for a moment. I've actually managed something before. I could tell you without pondering at all. ain't going to happen. I don't care how much any particular individual in this country hated the individual. If he was producing the results that we all set out to produce, that's the business plan, right? Anyone deny that? Or are we going down the path of a government-owned grocery store? That's the business plan. To be the highest producing show in the history of late night television. The sooner the better. Do you really believe, with this course of events, that they announce that Stephen Colbert is a gone pecan? And if you do, you're not thinking clearly. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Lacey Osborne, CEO and President of the St. Tammany Chamber of Commerce. We'll talk about population growth on the North Shore. And we'll also go to open lines on the back half of that hour. We'd love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We'll also talk about remittances relative to immigration in the 12 o'clock hour. So stay with us. Got a lot more coming your way. This is Newell on WWL.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes?
Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.